हरे
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद गीता चैप्टर 10 वर्स नंबर 24 थ्रू 40 वर्स 24 पुरोधसाम च मुक्त क्षमां विद्धि पार्थ बृहस्पतिं सेनानिनामहं स्कंदः सरसामस्मि सागर। Of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief Brihaspati. Of generals, I am Kartikeya, and of bodies of water, I am the ocean. Of the great sages, I am Bhrigu. Of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names. And of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. Of all trees, I am the banyan tree. And of the sages among the demigods, I am Narada. Of the Gandharvas, I am Chitraratha. And among perfected beings, I am the sage Kapila. Of horses, know me to be Uchchaishrava, produced during the churning of the ocean for nectar. Of lordly elephants, I am Airavat, and among men, I am the monarch. Of weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Among cows, I am the Surabhi. Of causes for procreation, I am Kandarpa, the god of love. And of serpents, I am Vasuki. Of the many-hooded Nagas, I am Ananta. And among the aquatics, I am the demigod Varuna. Of departed ancestors, I am Aryama. And among the dispensers of law, I am Yama, the lord of death. Among the Daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad. Among subduers, I am Time. Among beasts, I am the lion. And among birds, I am Garuda. Of purifiers, I am the wind. Of the wielders of weapon, I am Rama. Of fishes, I am the shark. And of flowing rivers, I am the Ganges. Of all creations, I am the beginning and the end, and also the middle, O Arjuna. Of all sciences, I am the spiritual science of the self. And among logicians, I am the conclusive truth. Of letters, I am the letter A. And among compound words, I am the dual compound. I am also inexhaustible time. And of creators, I am Brahma. I am the all-devouring death. And I am the generating principle of all that is yet to be. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. Of the hymns in the Sama Veda, I am the Brahat Sama. And of poetry, I am the Gayatri. Of months, I am Marga Shirsha. And of seasons, I am flower-bearing spring. I am also the gambling of cheats, and of the splendid, I am the splendor. I am victory, I am adventure, and I am the strength of the strong. Of the descendants of Rishni, I am Vasudev, and of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Of the sages, I am Vyas, and among great thinkers, I am Ushana. among all means of suppressing lawlessness I am punishment, and of those who seek victory I am morality, of secret things I am silence, and of the wise I am the wisdom. Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existences. There is no being, moving or non-moving, that can exist without me. O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Know that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. I'll read just one purport. Any glorious or beautiful existence should be understood to be but a fragmental manifestation of Krishna's opulence. Whether it be in the spiritual or material world, anything extraordinarily opulent should be considered to represent Krishna's opulence. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitham Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This chapter is entitled The Opulence of the Absolute, and Krishna in great details speaks about his opulences. He gives us a brief understanding of his infinite greatness. Why so? To help us engage in his devotional service. So that we can be actually happy by serving him. Now it's interesting that Krishna expects us to continue rendering service unto him, even though we may not be able to see him immediately. In the process of devotional service or bhakti yoga, we are serving someone whom we are not able to immediately see. But how is it that so many people are engaged in this service? But the fact is, even in the world around us, most people dedicate their life for things they have not seen also. It's like a young student, a young professional, most of them in India, at least till now, if we ask them, what are you looking up to? They might say, I am looking up to go to America, work there, make a lot of money, or settle there. So their goal is to go to America. But they have not seen America. They have not touched America. They have not felt America. Nothing. But they are convinced that America exists, and they're convinced that when they go there, they'll be happy. How is it? We might say, we meet people who have been to America. But so is the case in the field of spiritual science. The acharyas, they have seen Krishna face to face. So we see it's a universal principle that many people, say an electronics engineer, his very title is electronic engineer, that means electron is associated with his very name. But has he seen an electron? Never in his life. Maybe he feels a shock when it touches an electric wire, but how can he ascertain that it is because of the flow of electrons alone? It's just a theory. Nobody has ever seen an electron in his life. But he has dedicated his entire life for electrons. So it's a fact that everyone's life is more or less dependent upon faith. Everyone's life is more or less dependent upon faith. The question is where we choose to put our faith in. To attain life's perfection, we have to learn to put faith in the Supreme Lord Krishna and in the process that is given in the Bhagavad Gita. But if we choose to put our faith in other things, putting faith is inevitable. Even the most advanced scientist, he is putting faith in his senses. When he performs an experiment, he has to put faith in his own senses that what he is able to see and observe is correct. He has to put his faith in his own mind. And most people who are students of science, they put faith in the scientists. Most of the experiments that a student might read in his textbooks, he cannot directly verify. He has to put faith in the scientists who have performed those experiments and who have given those results in the textbooks. So even a so-called student of science, the element of faith is inevitable in his life. No one is exempt from this principle of faith. No one can live without faith, including the scientists who are against faith, the word faith also. But they themselves are obliged to put faith to proceed in science. But the question is, what makes the faith strong? Today we see people put complete faith in the scientists. They have got complete faith in the scientists. They have got complete faith in the media. For example, when the swine flu season was going on, when we were traveling in the local trains, we could actually experience there was slight terror in the air. People were wearing face masks and were a little scared because they feared that they would get the swine flu. But one day the newspaper reported that swine flu is not a big thing, that so many people die of tuberculosis every day, so many people die of cancer every day, so many people die of accidents every day. So this is one another thing, nothing much to worry about. And one day the newspaper reported and everything changed in the entire city. What power the media possesses. How much faith the people have in the media. How much faith people have in the newspapers and how much faith they have in the scientists. Some advertisement, it shows at the end of the advertisement certified by some British Dental Association or something, and nobody is there to verify it, and everyone goes and buys that brand of product. So people have ready faith in the scientists or in the world around them, rather than in what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita or in the scriptures. Why this bias? Why this leaning towards material scientists rather than spirituality? The element of faith is there, but why people are reluctant to put faith in the spiritual science? The reason is, we tend to put faith in something that gives us pleasure. It's a universal principle. If putting faith in something gives us pleasure, we are ready to put faith in that particular thing. Now, the material scientists, whatever they might say, but they have given so many amenities of life, the comforts of life, the pleasures of life. And once we see that these people are giving us pleasures in the form of material comforts, the tendency of putting faith increases. We put faith in anything that gives us pleasure. We put faith once, and once that particular investment of faith gives returns in the form of some positive experience, naturally you will put more faith. That's how gambling also works in one sense. You gamble, you win, you gain more faith in the process. So you put more money, and if you win more, then your faith increases in the process all the more. So faith is an investment. To live in this world, we have to put faith. But where we tend to put our faith more, where we get returns. Wherever this investment of faith gives us results of pleasure, we tend to put that faith more in that particular investment, in that particular direction. So from this point of view, the material scientists, by giving us so many amenities of life, so many pleasures of life, have bought our faith. So whatever they say, we tend to believe. Even the very term scientific progress, in one sense, is a misnomer. It itself signifies cheating. A person was saying that he attended an astronomical club conference, very prestigious astronomical club, and all the different scientists were presenting their findings. So one particular scientist was giving his presentation about his findings in the field of astronomy. Some constellations he might have found out, or some stars or something like that. So at the end of the presentation, this particular person, he questioned the scientist. Is what you are presenting the truth? If you ask that to a scientist who has done so much of research and is presenting his findings, he said, of course it is the truth. Otherwise, why would I present it? Then someone else asked the same scientist, that if in the future some other astronomer, some other scientist comes out with some findings that is contradictory to what you have presented today, how will you take it? And he replied in a gentlemanly way, of course I would be very happy. Otherwise, how will science progress? Now if you observe, he is contradicting himself. The first answer he gave was, what I am presenting is the truth. And then he is telling that if another scientist comes out with a contradictory theory, with a contradictory finding, I'll be happy with that finding. That means he is not sure that what he is speaking is the truth. So what is called scientific progress only shows that they don't know the truth. Because if they knew the truth, where is the question of scientific progress? Where is the need of searching more? Where is the question of doing more research? Research means you are searching again. Research. If you know the truth, why do you search? So even though it's a fact, the scientists, they're coming up with new theories because they don't know what is the reality, but still, the common people, they believe whatever the scientists say, because the scientists have bought their faith. How? By giving pleasure. So the investment of faith that the general mass has done in the scientists is paying off in the form of the amenities of life. But what has religion given? Even if you invest your faith in religion, you don't tend to get any results. So people tend to not put faith in religion anymore. But in this particular chapter, Krishna is mercifully helping us make that bold decision to put that investment of faith in Him. Because only when we put our faith in Krishna and take shelter of Krishna, we experience pleasure. And when we experience pleasure, that return, we can put more faith in Krishna. So how to gain pleasure in the field of spirituality? Or according to the science of the Bhagavad Gita, we have to take shelter of Krishna. And we cannot take shelter of Krishna unless we know His greatness. And so here, Krishna in great detail is explaining how great He is, so that we can take shelter of Him. Now Krishna is going into great details in this chapter because it is necessary for us to understand how great He is practically. We all know how God is great. But to actually understand how God is great, Krishna is explaining all these things in great detail. Great details. He is telling of the bodies of water, I am the ocean. Amongst fishes, I am the shark. And all these things which you can see around us, which gives us an indication of the greatness of Krishna, Krishna is explaining in this particular chapter. Some time back, I happened to be in a place where the Prime Minister of India was coming. And so the entire city, the traffic was blocked. People were standing on all sides, both sides of the road, at different locations, wherever there was place to stand, unthinkable locations, just waiting when the Prime Minister will come. So when the Prime Minister was coming, there were 20 cars that came in front, and then there was the Prime Minister's car in between, and then there were 20 cars behind him, proceeding one after another. And the cars just ahead of the Prime Minister, there were bodyguards who were thrusting their half their bodies outside the windows, searching for someone, some terrorist who might be ready to attack amongst the crowd. So I was also standing, and the whole experience was awesome actually. Now we know who the Prime Minister is. Most people, they speak ill against him also many times. Maybe some policies that he might have taken, some decisions he might have taken. It's not that everyone praises the Prime Minister and thinks good about the Prime Minister. So we know there is a Prime Minister who is the controller of the country, everything like that. And I'm sure most people who are standing there just to have the glimpse of the Prime Minister, not all of them were his ardent followers. But yet, they all experienced a sensation seeing the opulence of the Prime Minister firsthand. Even though everybody knows that the Prime Minister is the controller of the entire country, but still that first-hand experience of his opulence has a different effect on oneself, on one's mind. A person undergoes a different emotion. So similarly, most religions of the world, they say God is great. But how practically great is God? Krishna is giving a glimpse in this chapter. He's taking every field and choosing the best amongst that field. He's telling, I am that. There are various bodies of water, and the ocean is the greatest body of water. And so Krishna is telling, of the bodies of water, I am the ocean. So it's so beautiful. Recently I was at one of our farms, the Wada farm. I was staying there for a few days, and I was experiencing material nature firsthand, the glory of the God's creation firsthand. How beautiful the Lord's creation is. I didn't even see an ocean, but I saw just a river. But the river was so big, so beautiful. The scenery around the river was so beautiful. Everything was perfectly placed, the trees, the rocks, such a beautiful scenery. And I was thinking to myself, who has created it? Who has made it all? And here Krishna says, whatever great and wonderful things you see in this world, know it to be a spark of my splendor. So I could understand the greatness of God firsthand. So that is why Srila Prabhupada said that when we are in natural surroundings, it is easier to be God conscious. Whereas in the cities, what we see around is all manipulated by man. Ultimately, everything is made by God Himself. But still, there is the manipulating hand of man behind everything we see around in a city. But in the country or in the villages, everything is originally made by God. So it is easier to be God conscious because we are able to see the opulence of God firsthand. And we experience the power of the Lord's creation. And what happens when we understand a glimpse of how great God is? We readily take shelter of Him. It's a simple principle. Suppose we become sick and we have to go to a doctor. The more you have heard about the doctor, how expert he is, how great he is, the easier it is to take shelter of the doctor. And when it is easy to take shelter of the doctor, it is easy to follow his directions. And the better we follow his directions, the sooner we will be cured. So similarly, if we understand how great God is, we can take shelter of God. And when we take shelter of God, we experience pleasure. Why? Because to take shelter of God is our constitutional position. Jivera Swarupahoe Krishnera Nityadas. The problem in this material world is everyone wants to be independent of God. We don't want to become dependent on God. And so we are experiencing misery. But the spiritual science teaches us that if we learn to take shelter of the Supreme Lord, then we can experience pleasure in relationship with Him. So once we experience that pleasure by taking shelter of the Lord, then it becomes more easy to put faith in Him. And when we put more faith in Him, we take more shelter and we experience more pleasure. And when we experience pleasure, we put more faith and we can take more shelter. It's a cycle that culminates in experiencing the highest pleasures of spirituality. But to begin with, we have to understand the greatness of God that will help us take shelter of Him. That is very important. Speaking about the greatness of God, this particular month is also a great month. This is the month of Kartik. And the more we understand how great this month is, the more we can take shelter of this particular time period and do the activities that are recommended. And when we do those activities, we experience first-hand pleasure of spirituality. And then it becomes easier to carry on the process of spiritual life. Ultimately, all of us are looking for some experience, some spiritual joy, some spiritual experience, some pleasurable experience on the path of spirituality. And that is the sustaining force that can carry us on. Many religions or many spiritual paths just emphasize that you should believe. You should believe what is being told. Initially one might accept, okay, I believe. But how long can you sustain yourself? But the point is, unless that path of spirituality gives a process that gives some experience and some pleasure, it is very difficult to carry on. So that is why when Srila Prabhupada went to the Western world, even before he gave the entire philosophy, he told the people who are coming to him, his young followers, you chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And because they started chanting Hare Krishna in kirtans and while chanting japa, they were actually experiencing pleasure. And when they started experiencing pleasure, it was easier for them to follow all other rules and regulations of spirituality. So the first thing that Srila Prabhupada did was to give a dose of spiritual experience. And that is required for anyone to proceed further. So one process, one very easy process to experience spiritual pleasure is to start chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It's a simple mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. One simply has to chant this mantra daily on chanting beats, a fixed number of rounds. And in due course of time, within a short time, it is guaranteed that one will start experiencing pleasure. And then one can proceed further. So of course, this month of Kartik is the ideal time to start any spiritual process. Because any spiritual process that is performed in this month gives us faster results. So if you start chanting Hare Krishna in this month, that chanting of Hare Krishna will have faster effect on us and we'll start experiencing pleasure faster. And we can have a first-hand experience of spiritual pleasure by the end of the month. That is the power of the month. It has just started yesterday and there are very few limited days. So before time is exhausted, we have to somehow start the process of spirituality so that by the end of the month, we experience some spiritual pleasure, some spiritual joy that convinces us that spirituality is actually practical. So some of the things that are recommended in this month to experience fast spiritual pleasure is, first is chanting of Hare Krishna. Other items are offering of ghee lamps. Daily morning and evening, the Damodar Ashtakam prayers are sung and then ghee lamps are offered to the Lord. In the morning at 8:15 and in the evening at 7:30. So everyone is welcome to do the same and everyone is encouraged to start chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra in this particular month to start experiencing spiritual pleasure. And also it is said that if one reads one shloka or even 1/4 shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita in this month, one gets the benefit of giving 100 cows in charity. So there are great benefits in this month for reading Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees. So please try to take advantage of all these facilities in this month and experience first-hand spiritual pleasure before the month ends. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.